My name's Barry and I'm an addict. And just at a moment there where I thought I'd better pretend not to be shitting, and someone sort of went, hey, right over there, and I kind of went, hey, hiya. I felt the sort of the muscles on my face kind of just fix into this grin, you know. Yeah, I'm all right, I'm really all right, you know. But it's, of course, that's it's nervous making, because as Carol's so succinctly said, you know, the thing of the idea of exposing who you are and, you know, what you're about as a human being was probably the thing, you know, I used drugs for a long time to hide, you know. And when I think about actually the end of my using, there was a 5-year period where I think, you know, my wife left me and took our daughter to Australia. Both my parents and my sister died. I had a spectacular suicide attempt with a carving knife that didn't work. And I was institutionalized several times over a period of 2 or 3 years. And when I was at the most pain, if you like, in my life, and the most sort of discomfort that I'd ever experienced, the thing I tried to run away from in the beginning, that exposure of just being a vulnerable human being, the drug stopped working. So here I am. What am I going to do now? It's over, you know. And a couple of things happened along the way, you know, as they kind of do in recovery. I mean, the magic that goes on around here is just unbelievable. You know, I'll get to more of that a bit later. But already, while I was in the institution that I used to get carted off to for 8-week spells, you know, things would happen. You know, somebody I knew, his brother was in NA, and they'd come down, bring the literature, and just leave it, not say anything, just leave it. And I'd kind of look at it, you know, look at the logo. Oh, that's not that good a logo, really. Not really the kind of thing I'd design. You know, all this sort of stuff. Anything to not, you know, like, because you know what it's like. You need, when you need help, you kind of do the opposite, like run in the opposite direction. But something was going on there, you know, and I was in this place, in this, you know, mental institution, and my life had, this is where my life had come, you know, and I was like so grief-stricken. I was so sort of like, this, you know, I didn't figure this at all, of being like a kid who was kind of like a bit shy and a bit withdrawn and a bit sort of introspective and, you know, quite clever and a bit sort of, you know, curious about the way the world works and da-da-da-da, to being in this, you know, place of where, you know, that there was other people around me, and I was told that, well, your problem is drugs, you know, what you're experiencing is this extreme psychosis. And, you know, it was exactly like you described, Carol. You know, the demons were everywhere. The demons were in the number plates and the television that was, you know, I had a direct link to, and a few radios and a few tape recorders lined up in a room, just so I could get the information, just so I could figure it out, you know. And all the time, of course, this disease is turning everything around and making a sort of negative impact on everything I think, every little thing I kind of come up with. So I'm screwed, you know. And so I'm in there, and I mean, you know, maybe I'll talk about this later, but what we talk about, you know, extending a hand to somebody else and that'll help you get well. And I had the opportunity to do that in that institution. A woman came in and her body was kind of wrapped up and sort of, you know, in a, and she was very twisted from psychosis, you know. And I was given this job, really, and which I sort of begrudgingly took, of feeding her every day, and I fed her every day, and I watched her kind of like undo, like the twists and her body kind of change like this, you know. And I'd had problems of my own, physical problems. I've been born with both my arms and legs out of their sockets due to a disease that I have in my, it's in the arms, the bones, and the long bones, called Ollier's disease, and you get this extra cartilage at the end of the bone, so it doesn't fit in, so it pops out. So that's the way I came out screaming. And there was something going on there already, which was going to really impact on me later on in my recovery, you know. But there was no place left to go, really, after the drugs stopped working. What are you going to do, you know? So I went to I started to see a counsellor who was from NA, you know, and they suggested that I go to a treatment centre, which was really like a place for me to hold up for 8 weeks and then leave and use again, because I just didn't get it. I really didn't get it. People would be sort of brought in on stretchers and dumped off or whatever, and then within 3 days they'd be playing the guitar and singing these beautiful songs of love, you know. And I was like going, how do you do that? You know, I was sort of like, you know, I couldn't eat, like you said, I couldn't speak, you know, I couldn't, like, you know, form a thing, you know. And I was like, paranoid. And they said to me, look, the bloke over there, it's his last day. Go and talk to him, see how it's been for him. And I said, so what, how's it been for you? And he said to me, well, actually, what I think happens is you walk into a room and they arrange the furniture according to how they're going to sort of do it for you. And then when you leave the room, they rearrange the furniture for somebody. And I was listening to this guy going like, they rearrange. He's still clean. You know, he's a great guy and he made it. You know? And he's a very funny comedian. You know, that's, and it already was formulating these ideas, abstract as they were. But it frightened the life out of me because I had secret kind of self-obsessed thought that that's what everything is. You know, like you don't get, when you get on a plane, you don't go from there to there. You just go in the air and they change everything and then you drop. You know, it's the same place, different furniture. So anyway, so I'm in this place and it was quite painful. You know, and I'd have these moments of sort of like, you know, the possibility of something could shift, something could happen, you know. And I sort of started to write a few steps there, but I wasn't committed in the slightest. I knew that as soon as I leave there, I'd have to kind of get some sort of relief because it was just all too much. And driving back to London, you know, from the countryside, which started to be, as you say, Carol, a little bit brighter, just a little bit. You know, I just watched it kind of go dark, with that, and the roads sort of like narrow like that, you know. And I got back to where I lived, you know, and within hours I sort of like, you know, was like, just pop into the shops, love, you know. And then 24 hours later I'm in intensive care because I've met up with somebody and we've used heroin together. I've gone over, of course, because I haven't used for 8 weeks, in the toilet, the local toilet, you know, and he's run off and the guy in the place has gone, oh, that's it then, everyone's gone. So he locks the door and goes home, you know. Meanwhile, on his way home, he goes, oh shit, forgot my watch. So he goes back to the toilet, sees my foot sticking out of the door and rings an ambulance. That's, you know, probably why I'm alive today. And I'm very grateful to that man because, you know, I got to the hospital and they said, look, you know, why don't you just go on a script for the rest of your life? You know, and something happened. I think from the treatment center, the idea of being powerless over my addiction and my life being unmanageable suddenly started to sink in because they said to me, have a script, you know, do you want a shot now? You know, I said, no, I think I'll try and go to NA, see how that is. And for the first time in my life, because I wasn't following a negative idea, constantly running with it, it was replaced by a positive one, something happened. The volume of my addiction, which was just there all the time, you know, just going on, like the voices and void and backwards and forwards and all this kind of crap just going on and going on. The volume of it actually lowered for the first time. And I thought, there's something in this. There's got to be something in this because it lowered. You know, and I was completely like, you know, in that place of brokenness. I was like, you know, it was the end, and I didn't know what, you know. And I went to a meeting the next day, and the counsellor that I'd been seeing was sat next to me, you know, and she starts sharing about how, you know, she was really pissed off with her boss because her boss made her work late that night, but she was ever so grateful that he did because the plane that she was supposed to be on crashed, right? And I know some people on that plane died, so they didn't have the same story, but I noticed that there was something about being open to a possibility of hope rather than death and negativity and blah blah blah, and that's my thinking, you know. And so they said at the end, you know, okay, that's the end of the meeting. Need a volunteer to sweep the floor, you know. So I kind of stood, you know, I stood up and went, I'll do it, like that. And everyone left. So I just left, like, with this broom going, like, what am I supposed to do now? And there was a guy there who'd been at the treatment center, and he'd given a share, you know, like one of the Monday night shares or whatever. And he came back into the room, just walked up to me and said, keep coming back, and walked away. And that night I went to another meeting and a girl talked about the power of negative thinking and how it literally destroyed her life, you know. And I listened to it and I just something, I think it was like the shift that happens in meeting from my, you know, the addictive thinking and the way it's always been, like, suddenly the perspective changed. And for just an evening, just an evening, maybe only a couple of hours even actually, I felt free of it. I felt free of it. I felt able to go home and sort of, rather than be so like incredibly self-consumed, see what other people wanted. And it was just a new thing on me altogether, because, you know, so I thought, and I made a decision in that moment, because something had been relieved in that meeting. I'd never felt that kind of relief without using something to numb. You know, it was like that was the idea, to relieve something, but it never kind of, you know, something was different. And another reason I was at that meeting was because somebody I'd used with 10 years before that had said to me, there's that meeting down there. And I believed this person because I'd seen them use, you know, because I didn't really know what was going on around here. You know, I didn't, because I had that thing, I couldn't really look at anybody. I couldn't, you know, I was like, my back was bent over. The troubles with my arms and my hips like made it so that I walked very much like that, you know, and people would kind of come up to me and kind of lift me up like this. So all that was going on. And but I made a commitment in after that meeting to one day at a time try and recover from the disease of addiction. And so I thought, what do I do? And, you know, for all that idea of rebellion and for all the sort of, I think I'm a pretty traditional person, you know, when someone says, oh, well, get a sponsor, work the steps and, you know, get a book. I said, all right, because I didn't really have any other good ideas about it, you know, and all my ideas about it seemed to end in the, down the pan. So that's what I did, you know, and I started to, on a, you know, a course of recovery, which has stood me in good stead until today. I still do many of the things, you know. In the morning, the first thing I do when I wake up is pray. I'm not a religious person, I'll say that, but I pray, because of what I think praying is kind of giving up my take on things and just allowing something else to take place, a perception, you know, another way of seeing something. And I get such incredible, you know, relief from just lying there and going like, okay, you know, I admit that I'm powerless over my addiction, my life's unmanageable, you know, and whatever, you know, my higher power, help me accept that and manage my life for me, you know. And then I go through like 3, 7, and 11, you know, and then I kind of look at any defects that might be up, you know, at the moment, and kind of think, okay, well, I know that, like, you know, the opposite of a defect is a spiritual thing in nature. So if I'm feeling envious, you know, maybe I could look at content and sort of work towards having more content about what I've got there. So, you know, and it kind of changes around, because something like come back with force, and they've been thrown away, but I'll see the dustbin go past and go, oh, I need that. You know, it's like a kind of weird protection. So that's me in the morning, you know, and that's become the way for me over, you know, over the time of recovery. And then I get into it. And of course, you know, the first few years, I mean, like, well, the first few years, I'll say, well, you know, I continue to completely fuck everything up. I continue to destroy relationships. I continue to sort of like, you know, and I'm sort of like, you know, I see myself as this kind of like, you know, pretty nice, reasonable guy, you know, I don't have a kind of bad bone in my body, I'm not malicious, I'm not vicious, you know. And, but I tell you, when you get into that self-centered world of like this idea that I need, right, whatever it be, then put on, you know, that's the drive, I think, of addiction. I think the whole thing, this has been a quite recent revelation of mine, that, and all of that stuff is kind of, it's an illusion, you know. I need heroin. Well, I've sat here long enough without it, so I don't think I do. But anyway, we'll get to that bit later, because, you know, it's just, where was I? I've lost my thread slightly. So yeah, I embarked on a program of recovery, really, and, you know, these things I started to do were kind of making little differences, but I couldn't see it myself, you know, it had to take other people to say, like, it's going all right, keep coming back, you know, and, okay, you've destroyed that relationship and you're with someone in NA who's got a lot more clean time than you have, and you've just been 13 step, but it's all right, you'll be okay. You know, thinking, this person's just jealous, you know, just because I found my soulmate, you know. You know, and of course, you know, the idea of, you know, being loving and caring and compassionate at that time, in my first year, if you like, was kind of beyond me. And so I hurt this person very much, you know, soulmate, more like a cellmate, you know, really, you know. And then one one day I was given the key to kind of let her out, you know. And I've got to say, you know, she hated me for a long time. And she was right to. She was right to, you know, because I couldn't give anything, because I was all about just trying to get. That's my whole thing, you know. That's my, you know, I'm trying to get a replacement for heroin all the time, you know. But I'm not even aware of this, you know. I'm coming to meetings, something's being relieved, I feel a bit better, I can bop out down the street, and, you know, and little things are kind of coming together, you know. So, you know, and I'm with this girl who's 13-step me, and I'm kind of going mad, and I'm in a phone box, and I'm calling my sponsor, because I can't go home, because I'm staying at a house where there's, you know, six other people who are using and drinking, and there's three couples, and one of them lives there, and one of them lives there, and one of them lives there. So by 11 o'clock in the evening, I'm like lying in bed, going like this, and you know, and you know, trapped in this sort of like prison. And I'm calling my sponsor from this phone box, and he's going, "Well, how's your third step going?" And you know, of course, I haven't even given it a moment's thought, because I'm so wrapped up in the fact that if I go to the girls, you're going to start talking about that other guy again, and oh, and if I go home, you know, they're going to all be, oh, and what can I, there's no place to escape, you know, I want to use, on and on. So anyway, I do the third step with him, and the third step opens this door for me, because it's like something, after all the kind of like, you know, running around, it sort of stops a little bit, enough for me to sort of start getting my priorities. Before, you know, I got clean, you know, I was also, you know, like I said, my, you know, the person I was married to left, took my daughter to Australia. So what did I want to do about that? Did I want to have a relationship with my kid? Or did I just want to be one of those guys that goes, ah, you know, she went, big deal, what is it, move on, you know, whatever. And I thought, no, I want to have a relationship. I want to have a relationship with my kid. So I got to 18 months clean, and I went to Australia, you know, armed with a blue book and several tapes, and just went, you know, saying to my sponsor, do you think it's too soon to start the fourth step? And he goes, well, I think it might be a bit too late, actually. So I just, you know, there I was in this little room above a pub in a suburb of Sydney, writing my fourth step. And all I had to do was write my fourth step, go and pick up my daughter and take her to school, drop her off, go and take her, you know, go and pick her up after school, take her, you know, go back, write the fourth step, you know. And, you know, I did that. And then I was able to go back, you know, and go back again, and go back again, you know. And I'd just been there a couple of weeks ago, and we sat down, me and her mum, and her stepdad, you know, and her boyfriend. And we celebrated her 25th birthday. Wow. It was fantastic. Sorry, John Terry moment. but, you know. But, you know, it's sorry about that, anyone who's one of these. But, you know, and this is the stuff that happens in recovery when you go, okay, I'll do it. I'll do it. You know, I'm not... I'm sick of running away from it. I'm sick of, you know, I'm going to do it, you know. And so great things started to happen. But I also realized that, you know, while I was there, I met all these people in recovery, and they had these nice places to live, you know, and they had these, like, big places to live, and places with room in it, you know, to walk around, you know, rather than I lived in this thing where I had, like, you know, my job thing there, and the bed there, and some clothes there, and some little, you know, some toys, I suppose, there. So it was like work, rest and play. I used to call it like the Mars bar room, you know. That was it. That was all I needed. It was like this little thing. And then these people, you know, I met them, they're going like, and I'm telling them, oh, I live with six other people who use it, and they're going like, why? And I'm like, well, I don't know, really, you know. And that gave me the courage to start doing that, because I had a couple of years after the thing, you know, I walked away from the relationship, and I had a little bit of time on my own, and I went to meetings, and I got a car, I got a little car, and I got a place to live with a bit of room in it, you know, I had people over, you know, and I washed clothes by hand, and I cooked, all this sort of stuff, and I just started, at least, you know, to try and sort of embark on a kind of, you know, loving relationship with myself that was being shown to me by the people in NA, and from a, you know, what we call a higher power, you know, this direction towards, you know, love and care rather than beat, beat, beat and, you know, hell and horribleness, you know. And so, you know, it was all going well. And then I got back with my ex-partner who I came in to recovery with. And I thought, you know, I've got a few years now. I'm sorted. I know all this thing, and I don't destroy things anymore, and I'm sort of all, you know, at that. And it went so badly, and I couldn't work it out. What is it that I can't do with these things, you know? And I guess that sort of led me quite nicely, you know, into the six and seven steps. And I kind of riddled with these ideas about how I need to protect myself, you know, and how I need to sort of be in the world, you know. And like I sort of said before, you know, it was taught to me that, you know, under every defect is a spiritual value. So what I should do is go and get a thesaurus and look at all these things that kind of come up for me daily, you know, under the heading terror, and then this list of stuff that I do and stuff that I think and stuff that I act out, and you know, and the thing as well in relationships, and why I feel so scared to let anybody close to me, and why I kind of like go, well, go away, and then work it beautifully that I'm the one who's been abandoned, you know. It's fantastic, you know. And what came up for me in the fourth step was everybody I'd ever met in my life, I'd resented. And my sponsor very calmly sat there and he says, "Yeah, it's pretty tough being a victim, isn't it?" And I went, "What?" But that's what it was, you know. I was like, I had this beautiful thing. And I've heard people, like, you know, with like oodles of clean time, speak about this dynamic where like being a victim is sort of, you know, it's about being consumed with self-pity, resentment, and a feeling of difference. And those three things, like, I'm wearing them like all the time, like a bloody crown, you know. And it's like at this place to kind of take root, you know. And that, you know, that caused me so much sort of like, I mean, it's a great revelation, but it's like the pain of the exposure was like, ah. But then, you know, what's great about those two steps is that that's what they're for, to fix the, you know, the self-pity. To fix the you know, the resentment and all the pride stuff that goes with it, and the feeling of difference, you know. So I just, you know, started to work on those, and then, you know, put those in the pot and carry on, and that the relationship was over, and I was like, you know, and I'd throughout my recovery up to that point, I'd sort of been obsessed with people. Like something would come along, something would get painful, and I'd go, that person, they've got what I need. They've got the very thing that I haven't. So I'm going to think about it all the time and think about them all. It would drive me absolutely insane, you know. And I started to get obsessed with somebody in NA, and for three years I carried this thing, you know, like. And I all it was really is I couldn't ask this person to go out with me or anything like that, because they were great, you know, and I was this like lump of poo, you know. And there's no way I could sort of come at them equally and go. And I also what happened to me is I, you know, my head was still doing the negative walk and going, well, you've got no recovery anyway. What are you going to give this person, you know, a bag of chips or, you know? It was like, you know. So anyway, but at the time, you know, the painful thing was I was still in the other relationship for those 3 years, thinking about this other person, you know. And my sponsor said to me, I want you to write it all down, and I want you to let go of it once and for all. I want you to get rid of this. So I did. And I wrote the whole thing down, I wrote my feelings down, and I wrote blah, 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 blah. And then I got a call from the person I was in the relationship, who'd been to the drawer where I work, she never does, to look for something, and found this letter about this other person. And it was like, so, I mean, now it's like what I see is like, it was so painful for them. But what I could think at the time is it's so painful for me, you know, of course. And, you know, and I tell you, you know, I went through an absolute sort of, you know, kind of very, very, well, the beginnings of a dark period there, you know. And I did have some recovery. And I cared how this other person felt, you know. I really, you know, and we'd had a kid together, you know, and I didn't plan for this, and I thought this was going to be, and all that stuff I told myself, but I just couldn't, you know, do whatever, you know, anyway. So I'm obsessed with this person for 3 years, and she calls this person, and this person is going like, what? It's kind of like aghast, you know, about what's being told to them, you know. So it was all out in the open, and I was like a complete idiot again, and a bit of a prick, and all the rest of it, you know. And but then something really weird happened. The person I was with said, they weren't in recovery, or they didn't come to meetings or anything, but they said, maybe this is your higher power trying to tell you something. And I was like, what? And then a few days later, the girl that I'd been obsessed with for 3 years came to see me, and I was like, ready to go, I'm really sorry about that, you know, and she said, you know, well, it's funny you should say that, because I've kind of been interested in you for about 3 years. And, so, right. And, you know, I won't go through all the gory details of that, but, we've been together for 12 years since that time, and it's, you know, and I think a higher power did have something to do with it. As much pain, you know, and what's, the other thing is that my partner at that time is one of my great friends, and, you know, the steps are amazing, because I made amends, and last year, she was my son, the son with the person I was obsessed with. She was his teacher last year. And so I had to take him to school every day and drop him off there and go, you know, without the steps, without, it would just, you know, imagine the mess, the horrible, the kind of like, oh, fuck, yeah, and all that. But, you know, that's what's happened. And then I entered the darkest period of my recovery. I was walking down the street one day and I fell over. And I fell over, and I had this searing pain in my leg. And I thought, well, you know, what's that? And I'd had this searing pain on and off for about 6-7 years. And I kind of knew it was there, and I knew it was coming. And I knew the fact that I'd been born with my arms and legs out of their sockets, the fact that at 7 years old, I lay in a hospital in a plaster cast from my chest to my ankles, with both my legs spread wide, with an iron bar between, like that, was going to come home. And it did. And I had to go and have my right hip replaced there and then. Now, the thing about the disease that I have is means that my bones aren't formed properly. So they're a little bit thinner than, you know, like bigger guys, you know, arms or whatever. So, but because they did it quick, they didn't measure me properly. So the hip that they put in didn't take. So I had to sit in a wheelchair for a long time. I think it was like 6-9 months waiting for this thing to take. And where they cut my thigh bone in two, it wasn't joining together, it was actually separating. So I had to go and have it done again a year later. Alright? And somewhere in that surgery, somebody panicked and they said, right, quick, he's losing a lot of blood. Get the joint in fast. And they put in a child's joint instead of a grown-up's joint because they thought this would do it, okay? And of course, and then I'm in the recovery bay for 16 hours because I've lost 5 pints of blood, okay? So that my wife's beside herself, I wake up covered in silver foil, like, you know, to keep me warm, thinking I'm David Bowie or something, you know? And I get out of it and I start walking again. And then one day I come home to the family and I just start crying. I said, I can't do this anymore. I said, why? I said, because I'm in so much pain. It didn't work, right? So I go and see this person who's been recommended to me, who was absolutely a genius, you know. And I love what where they were coming from. They said, oh, you should have come and see me the first time because I'm the best. I was like, okay. And an amazing thing happened because I had that operation and... when I came to, I felt for the first time like I hadn't been hit by a truck, you know, because that's what happens after a surgery like that. Because they actually, you know, they cut you from ear to ear, take your ass out, put your leg over there, get the, I mean, you know, it's major. So I didn't feel like that had happened this time, okay? Now, one of the big things that had been going on for me was that my sister, who was kind of like my other parent, really, because she was 9 years older than me, both my parents had two jobs. So she was the person that picked me up from school, fed me, da 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 da. So I was kind of really close to her. She was also called Carol. And she died just before I got clean in a really horrendous way. And before she died, both of her legs were amputated at the thigh and 2 weeks later she died. Now I was carrying this in recovery, and I could never get through it. Like every time an occasion would come around, I'd be like, ah, it just hurts so much. So anyway, I'm in the hospital, and you know, I wake up and a nurse is holding my hand, and I sort of open my eyes. She goes, like, it went well. Don't worry, you know, don't worry. It's all going to be good now. From now on, it's going to be good. I was like, you know, that's like what we say around here a bit. You know, it's good. Don't keep coming back. It's going to get better. You'll be all right. You know, like, and I've got to tell you this, because it was one of those moments. I looked at the nurse, and her name tag was exactly the same name as my sister's. Both names, okay? So I'm like, whoa. And all right, you know what we're like. I'll kind of read into anything. But that's a moment. Come on. You know, I kind of went, something, whether it was like, just obviously it's a coincidence, but for me, it told me that the pain and the grief and all the kind of carrying the flag was over. And from that day, it's been over. It's been, you know, it's been fine. You know, I dance a lot, you know, Gary knows. And, you know, and that's been done. That's been dealt with in some way. But what about those two other operations? I mean, that was kind of painful. Okay, last year, we moved house. And we have neighbour, garden, or fence. And so I'm getting into, you know, I'm in a garden since I was a kid. So I'm like into the, like, leaning on the fence. Oh, how's it going? You know, like, chatting to the neighbour. So I'm chatting to the neighbour. Okay. And we start talking about hospitals because she has to go for an appointment and blah, blah, blah. So I get into my little kind of like, oh yeah, I had this, you know, it was terrible, like that. And I'm telling her about these two operations that have gone all like, you know, fucked up and whatever. And she's kind of like looking at me with this like face going like ashen. And I'm like, what's the problem? She goes, what was the name of the surgeon? And I told her. She goes, right, that's my dad. And I was like, next door? All these years later, you see? And I'm going like, because I need to heal something, right? I need to let go of this. So the next day, she's all kind of like, oh my God, you know, like, and all kind of in a lot of, you know, feeling really bad. And I was sort of working at the show, and I said to her, don't worry about it. It's done. It's over. You know, because you know what we're like. We're always trying to kind of improve the thing. We're not going to try and hurt somebody else. So I went over. I took some tickets, some flowers. There you go. It's done. And then the next day, I was at my job. I was trying to do something. My foot got stuck. I put the foot out like that. And I got so frustrated. I just broke down, right, because all the pain that I was carrying from those two operations, and I just let it out. And I couldn't, you know, and I've done all different things, you know, in recovery to know that, like, when it's coming, go with it, let it go, let it out, get free of it, you know. So this is what I did, you know, and this is just like, the thing doesn't stop. This just doesn't stop, you know, and I'm kind of like, you know, I was telling Gary before, you know, I thought, you know, things have been great, you know, like from then up until on. But, you know, some stuff recently has just kind of entered my perception, if you like, spirit being, you know, and it's been like absolutely unbelievable. Like I couldn't really, it's difficult to put into it. And I think it's that thing I talked about earlier on about this idea that I need something. And like, you know, developing a relationship with a power greater than myself and like looking at things from that perspective. You know, and Carol's analogy of like things getting brighter. Things getting so bright sometimes that it seems too much, you know. And like the stuff that's kind of joining up the dots from when I was a kid, from when I was kind of like, you know, sort of fearful and not very connected to people, from like looking at my race as being an issue, from looking at other people and going, you see, and that, you know, and setting people up so that I, you know, felt the difference, and like hanging my coat on that difference. All the little things kind of making sense. It's like a kind of pack of cards that's sort of suddenly falling together. You know, and probably a while ago, it was a similar thing. But it's moving forward all the time. It's like a kind of organic thing that just keeps on going and keeps on going. I mean, the fantastic thing about recovery for me is that I don't have a clue what is around the corner. When I leave here tonight, I don't know. I mean, I used to think that I knew, but I just tried to control it by blotting out reality all the time and being in control of things and being, you know, so afraid that if I let go of that control, it's going to just turn to crap, because that's what it always did, because that's what, you know. But the more I'm kind of getting into this thing of like, you know, the need thing being the illusion, you know, there was a bit ago something was going on for me, and I was like really sort of caught up in something. I could physically feel my skin kind of, you know, when you get that horrible kind of skin thing, like, ah, it's almost like my brain is kind of going like, you need heroin, you know, you need, you know, what, something. It was almost like this thing. I kind of caught myself going, maybe this is that thing, that illusion of need. And I thought about it. I thought, what do I really need? I thought, well, in this moment, nothing really, because I've got everything. I'm in a nice, you know, place with my family and friends, and like that. And then my skin sort of stopped doing that thing. And it's a bit like coming to a meeting where you kind of go like, oh God, I really need to share. I really need to kind of get this out, you know. And then sharing, and then going, oh, thank you. And then, you know, because you're walking like with your head down, like, yeah, you're right, doing it. And then you go, hey, how's it going? Yeah, all right. Because you've been relieved of that kind of self sort of containment, you know. And that's sort of been happening quite a lot lately. And I've been talking to my sponsor about it. And I, you know, I've got to really say that, you know, one of the best things, and I talked to him today, and I said to him, you know what, Robert, I fucking love you, man. Because, you know, what the guy gives me is just unbelievable. Because I can't give it to myself a lot of the time, because my own head tells me the other thing. And this person can step in. And it's, and I've had a sponsor pretty much for all my recovery, because I felt, I think there's been a couple of spots where I had a sponsor who used. And that was kind of, you know, bizarre. And then I didn't have a sponsor for a couple of years. And it wasn't that long, maybe. But most of the time I've had a sponsor. And I really, you know, would advocate, if you want to, you know, give it up and get into this thing, to, you know, I mean, it sounds a bit preachy, but, you know, get a sponsor, because it's really just, you know, to go through the shit that we have to go through. We need people around us, and if someone's been doing it and done it before us, it's, you know, it's great. It's really, it works. It, you know, it works, and going through the steps works, because I think that's when that magic happens. I think that's when the stuff kind of opens up. And, you know, and the discomfort of being a human being, you know, like something else kind of takes its place. We're all kind of together, we're all connected. And I don't feel that thing anymore where I'm walking down the street, like going, having to look at people from this like place of resentment just to protect myself, because, you know, I feel okay. I feel all right, you know, with who I am, you know. And I'm very pleased, you know, like you, Carol, as well. Like, next week I'm going to be 50. I'm really looking forward to it. And if I stay clean to the end of the year, I can pick up one of these things, multiple years of recovery. And when someone shouts, how many is that, Bazza? I'll go, 20. Keep coming back. Yeah.